Welcome to Home Story with Veronica. I'm Veronica Dickes, and today we're diving into the people, places, and decisions that make a house a home. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to Home Story. I'm your host, Veronica Dickes, and today we are simplifying one of the biggest stress points for homeowners, understanding the taxes involved when you sell or when you buy a home. Our guest, Ninfa Villagra, is the CEO of Target Tax Solutions and a trusted tax expert with more than 20 years of experience helping families and small businesses navigate financial decisions with clarity. Her warm, practical approach makes even the most confusing IRS rules easy to understand. Ninfa, thank you so much for joining us today. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And let's open with a question that nearly every homeowner has asked. Will I owe taxes when I sell my home? Is one of the most emotional financial moments that a family can face. And it's the uncertainty that can make it feel very overwhelming. So in this segment, we're going to explain exclusions, reporting requirements, and what actually triggers tax when selling a home. So, Ninfa, quick question. Who qualifies for the $250,000 to $500,000 home sale exclusion when it comes to taxes?
Well, if you are selling your primary home and you're single, you can exclude up to $250,000 in the gain.
Okay.
If you're married, you can exclude up to $500,000. So those are the two differences. It has to be your main home. You would have to have lived at least 2 years in the last five.
Okay.
And those 2 years don't have to be consecutive.
Can you explain that to us?
So, for example, the date of the sale would be, let's say, November 5th, 2025. So in the last 5 years, so going back to November 5th, 2020, in those 5 years, if you lived at least 2 years, 24 months, they don't have to be consecutive.
Okay.
Then you qualify as long as you own the home and lived in it.
And so I could have lived in 2021, then moved somewhere else and moved back in 2023 until 2024. And that's 2 years.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay. So if you're single, you can deduct up to $250,000, exclude. And then if you're married, $500,000. And now if there is any, let's say you did sell your home and it was more, the gain was more than the exclusion, you will pay the long-term capital gains tax on that amount.
Okay.
Yes. Which depending on your income, you're going to get taxed at. Usually it's about 15%. If you live in a state like North Carolina, you're also going to pay taxes on that.
Okay.
On that gain.
Is there a big difference between North Carolina and South Carolina on that?
Yeah, the depends. 5% is roughly for North Carolina.
Okay.
And South Carolina is a little bit more generous. I'm not sure the percentage of that because I usually focus mostly on North Carolina.
Yes, yes.
But it's similar. There are state taxes as well involved with the gain that was not excluded.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I owned a house for less than 2 years, can I get a partial exclusion for a job move or for any other reasons that are very specific?
Yeah, there are other, what I want to say, the IRS is... it's somewhat flexible.
Okay. Yeah.
That could be a divorce.
That's a funny word for the IRS.
Exactly. That could be a divorce. It could be like you mentioned, a job promotion and you had to move to another state, health reasons, death in the family, anything that prevented you, that cost you to move from your primary home. And those weren't your intentions, right? You plan to live there. And so, but you had to move because of those special circumstances. As long as you have the documentation for it, the IRS is flexible and you can exclude, we have a worksheet that we use and we can put all your, the dates on there, even the closing costs and everything to figure out the basis. And we can go through some examples too.
Okay. So I know in real estate, we help a lot of people relocate. Mm-hmm. If they are in that situation, what kind of documentation do you usually require for somebody if they weren't in their house for 2 years and they need to move states because they had a job? What kind of documentation do they need to have ready for this?
In case of an audit, it would be, for example, if they relocate to Florida, right, because of a job, obviously, you have your letter from your new employer that you're going to get this new job somewhere else. And basically, we just... file the taxes accordingly, but in case you need it, then you have that proof.
Okay.
So the letter from an employer, or if you're sick, a hospital, you know, letter from the doctor saying that, you know, you can't live in North Carolina because allergies.
I was just going to say because of allergies.
Yeah. Allergy season during tax season is horrible.
Yes.
For me.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, if I get a 1099-S, mm-hmm. do we still have to report even if our gain is excluded?
You do. That's when you want to tell the IRS, I don't have to pay any capital, any kind of capital gains tax on the sale of my primary home. You inform the IRS, I've lived in my home. My gain was only $200,000. I'm married, so I have an extra $300,000 to work with, but I don't need it. So you want to be clear, you know, you really want to be clear with the IRS.
Okay.
And tell them. We don't want to leave it up to, let them figure it out. No. You explain to the IRS. So when you receive that 1099-S from the attorney office is going to send
it. And can we clarify for our viewers what a 1099 is?
Basically, it's a tax form where the attorney sends the IRS, the seller, sometimes the buyer. It has the property address on there that was sold. It has the date of the closing, and it has the amount that it was sold for.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So it's just basically a reporting form of that real estate transaction that may possibly have a taxable event.
Okay. So, and we were saying that when the attorney gets the 1099-S, or when the person gets a 1099-S, with what we were talking about, mm-hmm. what are the next steps then?
Well, then they take it to their tax preparer, somebody like us, someone that's, you know, knowledgeable in this, and go ahead and report this on a tax form 8949. And on there, they're going to, you know, say that it's the main home, that they're going to put the date of sale, which it says it on the 1099 transaction form.
Okay.
And it's going to have the selling price. And then you have to let them know the cost basis or what your home, you know, what you pay for and any additional capital improvements. That could be a roof, a pool, a deck, anything that appreciates the home.
Okay.
And gives it more life. Like even if you re-gutted the kitchen, anything that prolongs the life of the home.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, maybe little fixer uppers here, like a you know, if you change the lighting, that may not, that's just an
right.
expense.
That's really, more cosmetic than anything
cosmetic.
Else.
Yeah. Because you want to close that gap.
You
know, you want to get it closer to where, especially if you have a big gain, if somebody bought a house, I don't know, in California for $150,000 and they sold it for $1 million. And their marriage finally joined. They lived in the home. Now you have a big, big, you know,
right.
Amount. So you want to be conscious and take all that information to your tax preparer.
Okay.
What increases the basis? What? So then you come up with a new adjusted basis.
Okay.
So we can lower the gap.
Okay. And that's beneficial because I want to make sure that everybody that's watching us is understanding right now. Why is that beneficial?
Because if you are over the $500,000 threshold, if you're married, filing, joint, then you're going to pay capital gains tax on the difference. And so if that's $100,000, if that's $200,000, if that's $300,000 that was not excluded, then you're looking, depending on your income, you're looking at the capital gains tax rate, which could be 15%, 20%, 25%. There's a lot of different factors. And then you have the net investment tax as well.
Okay.
Which is another 3.something%.
Okay. This blows my mind every time. This is why you need to work with an accountant to make sure that they help you out. And if you sold at a loss, for example, I have a house and I sold at a loss, can we deduct it? And how do we, or how do home office or rental use affect taxes?
Okay. Well, if it's your primary home, you definitely cannot claim the loss.
Okay.
But I will tell you this, if you have a loss and it's significant, and in this, you know, you know better than me about the real estate market. If there is a loss, I would say if it's a $50,000 loss and you cannot take this because it's your primary residence, I would say put it up for a rental property.
Okay.
Convert it to a rental property. Have it, you know, the initiative to say, I'm going to put it on the market. I'm going to rent it out for 6 months. So now it's a rental property. For rental properties, you could write off the loss.
Okay. So that would be the trick. Just make sure that you do that conversion so that you can put the loss on there.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And for the home exclusion, if it was your primary home and you did have a business in the home and you depreciated part of your home, that depreciation has to be taxed differently. So you cannot exclude the depreciation that you took as a home office in the home.
Okay.
So that gets a little tricky.
Yeah. Well, I think everything with taxes, it gets a little tricky, but this is amazing information because I don't think a lot of people are aware of some of the things that they can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. And one of those things, like you said, you know, when we work in real estate, if you're going out of laws and if you convert it to a rental property, then you're talking about a whole different thing.
Yes. And I want to be clear, every taxpayer has their unique situation.
Yes.
And we're speaking very vague. And I always say consult with your tax preparer. Give them all your, you know, what's going on in your life. And then they can provide you with the best advice.
Yes. It is not a cookie cutter. You have to make sure that they look over all of your situation. This is not, but these are good questions that you need to ask your accountant or your tax preparer.
Right. This is a very good starting point.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Perfect. Now, coming up next, we break down what homeowners can actually deduct and why so many people mix up deductions with cost basis. Don't miss this. We'll be right back. Okay. Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation. Welcome back to Home Story. Want more of the helpful guidance that you're seeing today? Stay connected to Home Story and all of our Now Media TV favorites, live or on demand, anytime with the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS. You can also catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. From home ownership and lifestyle to business and community, Now Media TV brings you programming in English and Spanish 24/7. We are here with Ninfa Villagra, and now we are tackling a huge source of confusion for homeowners: deductions. Many people don't know what's deductible now versus what increases your cost basis later. Ninfa, let's bring clarity to what homeowners can actually write off. This segment breaks down mortgage interest, points, property taxes, and which closing costs matter for taxes. Is mortgage interest still deductible, and what are the current limits?
Yes, they are. If you have secured a loan against your home, your primary home, you can definitely deduct up to $750,000 if you're married, filing joint, and $375,000 if you're single.
Okay.
Interest, right? We're talking about interest. However, for us to deduct our mortgage interest, we have to exceed the standard deduction. So the IRS already gives us a standard deduction for married, filing joint. Basically, depending on the tax year, the deductions on the standard deductions change. If your mortgage interest, your real estate taxes paid, your state income taxes paid, your medical, your charitable donations exceed the standard deduction, then we're going to go ahead and file Schedule A, which should itemize deductions.
Okay.
And that's where we put the mortgage interest expense deduction there.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. And are points deductible the year that they are paid or over time? And when I'm talking about points, I'm talking about points that home buyers pay to the lenders in order, like, for example, to reduce their interest the first year. I just want to make sure our viewers are understanding what we're talking about with points.
Yeah.
Are they deductible and over the year that they are paid or over time?
Yeah, they are deductible in the year that they are paid.
Okay.
So you're going to go to closing and you're going to pay points at closing. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So at closing, you pay down the points to lower down the interest rate. Then the bank receives that money. They're going to send at the end of the year, after everything has been reconciled, at the beginning of the year in January, you're going to get a 1098 mortgage interest statement from the bank.
Okay.
And sometimes you get a few. It depends. Maybe that first bank sold your loan. So make sure you have all your documentation.
Keep the documentation.
Yes. And you'll get an envelope that says important tax information.
Yes.
And so if once you receive those documents, take it to your tax preparer and they'll see that on there, you're going to have a box that's going to say points paid. For, you know, at closing at for principal residence.
Okay.
And that's what's typical to deduct on your tax return.
Okay.
Again, it only makes sense if it exceeds the standard deduction. Sometimes the first year, let's say you bought the house in December, you haven't made 12 months of payments. So you don't have interest. You don't have that much interest you paid to the bank.
Exactly.
So at this point, it's not advantageous for you to use the itemized deductions, where we put the mortgage interest, the real estate taxes. Maybe you haven't paid real estate taxes yet because the county hasn't assessed the home.
Right. And that's especially true with new construction.
Exactly.
Yes. Because exactly. They assess the lot and then exactly. It waits until they actually assess what the house is
and
worth.
And usually that comes the following year.
Yes, exactly.
And then you call and like, oh my God, my mortgage payment went up. I'm like, yeah.
Buy a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
You went from a $600 tax valuation from the lot to $5,000 or $4,000 for the house.
Exactly. So, yeah. So once we see it makes sense as a tax preparer, we definitely can deduct the mortgage interest, the points, the real estate taxes, everything that has to do with that real estate transaction.
Okay, perfect. Speaking of that, are property taxes deductible and what caps should homeowners know?
They are fully deductible as long as obviously, you know, for the new Jobs and Tax Cut Act, which is the law that was back in 2017, that was actually limited.
Okay.
Okay. So the state and local income taxes, it involves the real estate taxes, your vehicle taxes, and your state income tax withheld. So like a state like North Carolina, South Carolina, where we pay state taxes
yes.
from our
W-2. Yes, we do.
Yeah. So that's limited. Yep. It's $5,000 if you're single, married, filing separate, it's $5,000. If you're married, filing joint, it's $10,000.
Okay.
So let's say your property taxes, your W-2 state withholdings exceed the $10,000, you can only deduct $10,000.
Okay.
So if your real estate taxes help to get to the $10,000, then that's fine. We can deduct all that.
Okay, perfect. Is there anything in specific that people should be looking at in different price points when you're talking about $10,000? Like we're talking about luxury, for example. Mm-hmm. If somebody owns a luxury home and the property taxes are a lot higher, is there anything different that we do with the accounting or is just the same for everybody?
Yeah, it's the same for everybody. Unfortunately, you know, before 2017, if your real estate taxes were $20,000, $18,000, $16,000, whatever, you were able to fully deduct that.
Okay.
Now it's just limited to $10,000.
Of course it is. And they change it. Yep. Yes. I love that. I love when they make it harder for us. And which closing costs are deductible versus added to the home basis?
So I always say that just we go by the 1098 mortgage interest statement that you get from the bank. That's going to be what the IRS received. You know, that's basically your points in there. You know, and unfortunately, if this is your primary home, you cannot deduct the appraisal fee, the title, any of that. You know, that's mostly for investment properties that you can deduct. For a primary home, it's going to be your mortgage interest, your points, and your real estate taxes. And you cannot even deduct more mortgage insurance premiums anymore. Those are out.
Okay.
So, you know, like from like an FHA loan or, you know, a lender can probably specify this more. If you pay insurance on that loan, which is mortgage insurance premium mm-hmm. on yep. the loan, I'm not speaking of the dwelling yes. itself. That
PMI, yeah,
right. Private mortgage insurance.
Private mortgage insurance.
That is not deductible.
Okay.
So if you have that, it sometimes, you know, it'll show on the mortgage statement, but it's not a tax deduction on your primary.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just so you know, PMI is required by the lenders on certain loans. If you owe, you need to have. It's hard to explain it for me sometimes. If you if the difference between what you own the house and what the house is worth, you need to have a 20%. You need to pay down your mortgage by 20%. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm trying to say. Loan to value. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I got confused in my head. So once you get to that 20%, so for example, and I'm just making up numbers here. If you buy a $100,000 home, which doesn't exist, it's just an example. And once you owe only $80,000, meaning that you're at that 20% of loan to value, then you can cancel that PMI.
Correct. You would private refinance mortgage insurance. Yes. To eliminate it.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. You don't have to refinance. You can just call the lender.
Oh, you can call.
And
oh,
say,
okay,
listen,
nice.
I'm at 20% already of loan to value. Right.
They evaluate that.
I'm good to go.
Yes.
So watch for that. So Nympha, when you are preparing the taxes for somebody, let's just say I'm your client, which I am, and I go to you, what is going to be the best way for me to prepare you better to help me in the best possible way? Besides the statement that we get from the lender, is there anything else that we as homeowners regarding real estate in specific should be bringing to you, whether it's personal or investment type of real estate information for you to help us better?
So for a personal, I would say, you know, obviously the mortgage interest statements from the bank that you'll receive mm-hmm. in January, that's pretty much very cut and dry. I take notice and I see that, you know, one of my questionnaires is, did you buy a house? Did you sell your house? So that will prompt me to help you what to bring.
Perfect.
So for example, if you said, did you buy a new home? And my client answers yes, I'm looking for a mortgage interest statement if it's their primary, right? Also, if it's an investment property, there's a little bit more paperwork in that. Obviously, if there's any capital improvements, bring the receipts. You know, if you let's say put a new roof, if you, you know, redid the kitchen, all the receipts that had any, you know, that involved that new improvement. Also the mortgage interest statement for that home. And if there are other stuff that would help, like energy efficient credits, I don't want to really get into that because
it's
more of a tax, you know, but there are certain credits that you can get on a primary home and a rental for energy efficient.
Okay.
And I would suggest to bring me those receipts, like a new air conditioner, a furnace.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. So keep track of all of that, anything that you do to your house that's significant, that's major, so that when it comes time to prepare the taxes, you can bring this to your tax preparer.
Yes.
Sure.
Mention anything that you probably were like, oh my God.
Yes, exactly.
That's good.
How
to
much
mention.
Was that? Yes.
Yeah.
Bring that.
Yeah. Don't
bring that.
Usually, you know, I have a client, I've printed everything. They're like, oh, by the way, you know that I had a flood in my house and in my rental property and my tenant. And I was like, what?
That's important information.
Yeah, that's important information.
That's important. Nympha, for viewers wanting to get more tax support beyond the filing season, how can they reach you? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Email.
Okay.
Email is good for us.
And what is your email address?
All right. info@targettaxsolutions.com. Yeah. Email is good. It comes straight to my phone. We have an assistant Monday, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
Perfect.
Somebody's always there from 11 to 5. After tax season, we're just basically appointments only.
Okay.
But we are open those days that I mentioned. And email is the best. Also, we do have LinkedIn and Instagram, you know, things like
Target
that.
Target Tax Solutions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So look them up, Target Tax Solutions. And the email was info@targettaxsolutions.com. And stay with us. Next, we are going to simplify capital gains and how to calculate your actual profit when selling a home. Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation. Welcome back to Home Story. We're here with Nympha Villagra. And this segment is all about capital gains, something buyers and sellers Google constantly. So let's break down how gain is calculated and what determines your rate. Nympha, let's simplify this for everybody that's watching as much as we can, because this can get really complicated. This segment explains short-term versus long-term gains, basis, depreciation, recapture, and tax rates. What's the difference between short-term and long-term gains on real estate?
Well, short-term is if you held the asset less than a year.
Okay.
So that would be the short-term. And then the long-term is if you held it for at least a year and more.
Okay.
And the short-term usually gets taxed at a lower rate. And I'm sorry, the short-term gets taxed at a higher rate and the long-term gets taxed at a short rate.
So if you've had a house, whether it's primary or investment, correct?
Well, primary, we can go back to the exclusion.
Yes.
The sale of your primary home, you can exclude some of the gain depending on your filing status. If mostly this issue is mostly, I feel is very important when it comes to selling a rental property.
Yes. Okay.
If you don't decide to do, I'm sure we'll talk about that after too, about the 1031 exchange.
Yes.
If you decide to just sell your investment home and you held it for longer than a year, then you're going to pay long-term capital gains. And that's usually defined by your tax bracket.
Okay.
15%, 20%. And then if your tax bracket is over a certain amount, then you have an additional 3.45 net investment tax.
Okay. And the next question would be, if someone sells in under 12 months, so we're talking about the short-term capital gain, mm-hmm. what rate typically applies on that scenario? And is there a difference, once you answer that, is there a difference between a primary home and an investment home?
So normally it would be about, it's an ordinary income, it's about 10%, 10-12%. If, again, it's just treated just like a regular sale, ordinary tax rate. Definitely on your personal, you're going to pay if you've had your home for more than 2 years, you're going to pay the regular, long-term capital gains tax. But if you held your primary home and you made, more than 10%, on that sale, then you're going to pay the taxes as a primary.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's part of your ordinary income.
Okay. And typically what would be the rate for the short-term capital gain?
It's about 10%.
It's about 10%.
Yeah, it's about 10%.
Okay. Is there anything that can be done if somebody moves, like we were talking before, for relocation or they got sick, or does that matter at all whatsoever in this scenario or not really?
Yeah, you can. You have some exceptions to that as well.
Okay.
It just depends on the situation. Like I said, it's good to speak to your tax preparer and give them your actual experience of what's going on so they can give you the correct advice to that.
Exactly. Yeah. And for investors, because we do work with a lot of investors in real estate, that they need to make sure that when they do their numbers, mm-hmm. right from the beginning, that they're calculating that if they're going to flip a house, for example, they're going to fix it up in 3, 5, 6 months and they're going to sell it within a year of when they purchased it. This is something that they need to consider, correct?
Correct.
What's your advice on that?
Yes. I like when I have a client calling me and asking me, well, how much taxes I'm going to pay? I need to know more information.
Yes.
So I go back to them and I say, well, how much do you think you're going to sell the house for? Can they give you some kind of an estimate sheet where it shows if you sell the house at this amount, the closing costs, and then what your potential gain is on that home? Because I sometimes say, well, do you think you want to buy another house? Mm-hmm. Then you fall into that 1031 exchange. Do you want to do that? Or do you want to go ahead and take the money and run and pay the taxes?
And pay the taxes on it.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. So depending, again, that some people want to, pay off some debt. They want to, just think about retirement, investing in a different mm-hmm. vessel than real estate. And I said, go ahead and take the tax hit. Now, maybe that year their income is not that high, so their tax bracket is lower that year. Perhaps when they do, take that, if they decide to sell at a later time, maybe their income at that time is higher, then their taxes may be higher as well when they do sell. Because remember, when you're just postponing the sale. And we'll talk about that in the next segment.
Yes, we will. We absolutely will. Okay. And how do you calculate basis so the gain is correct?
The basis is going to be what you initially pay for the house.
Okay.
Plus any capital improvements.
Okay.
So
that's your basis.
That's your basis. Okay. It's what you actually pay for, what it cost you. That's your cost basis. And then you have your adjusted basis after you added capital improvements, after any type of, you know, obviously capital improvement would be the replacement of the roof. Mm-hmm. You know, you re-gutted the entire basement. So now you have another room, another, you know, heated square feet. You made the house bigger, you know, those are all capital improvements. So now you have what is called an adjusted basis.
Okay.
And now your new adjusted basis, depending on the amount that you sell it for, then you have what is your net gain.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. And what is depreciation recapture in one sentence? But however you can explain it, it doesn't have to be one sentence. And when does it matter?
Well, when we're talking about depreciation, we're talking about an investment property because we obviously going to take what the cost is, and we're going to take a deduction every year over 27 and a half years.
Okay.
Okay. And so the IRS says, hey, we can actually give you a deduction for your house losing value in a way, but it's not, right? In real life, right. The house is appreciating.
Yes.
This is what I call just a book write-off. It didn't really actually lose value. So the IRS, every year you get to deduct on your Schedule E, your rental schedule, you get to deduct depreciation. But what happens is when it's time to sell, the IRS is like, pay me that back, all those deductions that
you took.
That's what it means by recapture.
Okay.
So that recapture, let's say you depreciated $80,000 of your rental property over the course of, I don't know, 10 years. And so when it's time to sell, that $80,000 is going to lower your costs. It's going to lower your adjusted basis of that home.
Okay. Can you give us an example?
So for example.
Like making up numbers.
Okay. For example, $400,000 is your adjusted basis.
Okay.
And you've taken $80,000 worth of depreciation. So now your true adjusted basis is $320,000.
Okay.
And so that lowers your cost.
Okay.
So if you sell higher, then your gain looks bigger. So now I'm going to tax you more.
So you bought it at $400,000. The depreciation was $80,000. And you waited 5 years. And now you sold it at $500,000. Mm-hmm. So now the difference, instead of $100,000 between the $400,000 and the $500,000, is $180,000.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. I give it and I take it away. It's what I say with the IRS.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it.
I let you one time, and, you know, for all these years, you reap the benefit of deducting this depreciated amount, and now you have to give it back to me.
Okay.
At the time that you get rid of this investment property.
Okay. Is there anything that investors should know that would help them with this? Is there anything that could be added as, you know what, to compensate it somehow?
Well, you know, as long as it actually happened and you have the records, you know, obviously you have to be very, I don't want to use the word creative, but you have to just be very detailed when it comes to the adjusted basis of the home. You know, really, really, you know, if you own this home, let's say for 10 years, you have to remember, and if you haven't documented that on your tax return as you were going, that could be a problem too, because you don't have paper trail.
Right.
But, you know, you just have to make sure that you've been giving your tax preparer every year any kind of improvements that you've made to the home to increase the basis. So then when you do sell, you know, that there has been some paper trail on that increased basis.
Yes.
Okay. Or sometimes, you know, it happens in the same year that you sell it. You know, your realtor, you can be like, okay, Nympha, if you want to sell your house,
yes,
you're going to have to fix the bathroom. You're going to have to do this to the kitchen. So now
the HVAC is 25 years old. How about we put a new one?
Exactly. So right, you know, those capital improvements are happening in that same year that you're selling it.
Yes.
So, you know, that's going to increase your basis.
Okay.
Because you're already going to take a hit on the depreciation.
Yes.
And that's going to get taxed different too on that gain. So you're going to have the gain, you're going to pay taxes on the gain, and you're going to pay taxes on the depreciation part as well. It gets taxed a little different.
That was very clear. Thank you so much. Because even I need a clarification on that for sure. And are there any extra taxes that high income sellers should watch for? And can installment sales help?
Well, yes. You know, you obviously the high earners, you said?
Yeah, like high income sellers. So a seller that it's on a tax bracket that is really high.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely they're going to pay the net income tax that I was talking about. And it's actually 3.8, sorry.
Okay.
They're going to have that on there. And, you know, there's a lot of creative ways to postpone that that gain. We can definitely talk about that in the next section.
Okay, perfect.
But yeah, I would suggest at that point, if that gain is very significant, to consider the 1031 exchange.
Yes, we are definitely going to talk about that next. And that's just to give you a little preview. That's a way to just defer taxes when you do a real estate transaction, when you are selling and you want to purchase another home. It's a way to defer those taxes for later on.
For later.
So we're going to get into that on the next segment, actually, because coming up next, for those thinking about investment property, we are diving into 1031 exchanges and how investors defer taxes the right way. And that's exactly what we mentioned. You know, it's funny because everything is intertwined and we want to make sure that we give you all the information, but we try to break it down a little bit.
Exactly.
So that it's organized. So don't miss out because this next segment is going to be absolutely amazing. Exactly. Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation. Welcome back. We are closing today's conversation with 1031 exchanges, a topic investors bring up constantly. Can I defer the tax? NIFA is here to clear up the myths and walk us through what's actually allowed. In this segment, we are going to explain who qualifies, deadlines, the role of intermediary, and the most common mistakes. So, NIFA, my first question to you is, who qualifies for a 1031 exchange and does it work on a primary home?
Well, who qualifies? Actually, if you do it the right way, everyone can qualify, right?
Okay.
So, for example, first of all, we would have to, it doesn't qualify for a primary home, going back to your question, because it's an investment property. It's an investment. And so your primary home is your primary home.
Right.
So for the primary home, you can do the exclusion and all that. But as far as a 1031 exchange, as long as you follow certain rules, you should qualify.
Okay.
For example, the first thing I always say is it has to be used in the sale, you have to use a qualified intermediary. And say the word again, I'm sorry.
So it's a qualified intermediary. We're just going to call it QI. That's how everybody refers to it because it's hard to say that word. So QI, people.
Sorry, the bilingual in me is...
Yes.
It could be funky.
And I am so sorry to cut you off real quick. A lot of people are not going to know what a 1031 exchange is that are watching. Okay. Can we really simplify and explain what it is?
A 1031 exchange is just basically it's the word that we use from the IRS code. And all you're doing is you're selling your investment property in a like kind, and you are relinquishing one property. You're selling one property that's similar, like kind.
Yes,
it doesn't have to be exact, and you're buying something similar to that.
Exactly, and you are deferring the taxes on the property that you sold.
Correct.
Yes, and we'll get into it later, but I wanted to make sure that people knew what just the basis.
Okay.
Of it. So what we were talking about. Okay, so we were talking about who qualifies for the 1031 exchange and does it work on a primary home? So we established.
Correct. So once you relinquish the property that you're going to sell, you have to identify, you have 45 days, okay? And you use the QI, the intermediary.
You
use
QI.
The QI. You have 45 days to identify the new property. Now, there are certain rules. It could be three properties, or it could be up to 200% of the value that you're selling.
Okay.
Okay. And once you identify that property and you have to close within 6 months. So you have 45 days to identify. So, okay. So if you're selling, let me use a real example.
Yes, let's do that.
If I'm selling a condo, okay, in South Park, and now I have 45 days to say, okay, I'm gonna reach out to you. I'm gonna reach out to an attorney.
45 days after you sold it, it closed and somebody else bought it?
Okay. Yes, you have 45 days.
Okay.
From that date, you have 45 days to identify what you're going to buy.
Okay.
And then you have 6 months to close from that date.
Okay.
So basically, you know, if you follow those rules, you're good. You're Perfect. Good to defer those taxes to a later date.
And the QI, which is a qualified intermediary, is a professional, right? If I'm not mistaken, or somebody who is going to take that money, because you don't get the money. This is part of the 1031 exchange thing. Put it in an account, and then when you get that second property, it's like a cash, sort of, like a cash purchase, and then they apply that money to that second property. Am I right on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say the QI at this point would be once you sell that condo, it would be that real estate attorney.
Exactly.
Yeah, keep it there. Don't touch it. If that money comes to you personally, you void this 1031 exchange. You void that transaction.
It's so now you have to pay taxes.
Yeah, now you're done. You had access to the money. You're done.
Yes. So you don't have that. That's an important part of the 1031 exchange. Mm-hmm. Want to make sure viewers are understanding. You don't have access to that money. You sell that house. Mm-hmm. That money goes into an account. And then that money that is on that account is applied towards the purchase of the similar type of property. So the example you were using.
So for example, and let's say you do need that money and there is a time for it and we'll talk about that. So let's say you sell you have $400,000 in proceeds at this point, right? And you identify another, because you want it in a different neighborhood, maybe the HOA, I don't know, whatever, the reason why you're buying something else. So then you go and you have, within the 45 days, you identified it. Now you're closing 3 months later, and now you've bought something for $300,000. So you have $100,000, what is called boots.
A boot, okay.
Yeah, that's called a boot. And so you're going to pay the capital gains tax on that $100,000.
And do you receive that money?
Yes, you'll receive that money. Now is the time to touch that money.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's say you probably did that on purpose because you needed the $100,000 in the beginning, but you don't want to do that at the beginning. You do it after that real estate transaction. So you can qualify for the 1031 exchange.
Okay. And if, for example, I sold a condo for $400,000 and I want to get two smaller condos because I want to have two properties that I can rent out in a different neighborhood that's not as expensive as South Park, can I do that?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, you can buy up, you know, you can buy many properties as long as it's like kind.
Right.
Yes.
If you sell a condo, can I buy a house?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, those are all of real estate.
Gotcha.
So you can sell, you know, you can sell a house and buy a multifamily.
Okay.
You can sell a condo and buy a house.
What would be considered not like kind?
For example, if you sell the condo and you decide to buy a dry cleaner business.
Gotcha. Okay.
If you decide to buy a farm, they're not similar.
So residential is one thing, but when you get into commercial and you get into, then that's a not like kind.
Yeah, or real estate.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, exactly. If you decide to buy, you know, you sell your condo and you decide to buy a dealership.
Gotcha.
That's not like kind.
Exactly. Okay. That makes sense. And we talked about the 45 day and the 180 day, which is the 6 months. So just to make it clear again, once you sell that property, you have 45 days to identify another property, meaning you send the person who's handling your 1031 exchange, these are the properties that I'm interested in.
Exactly.
Identify them. It doesn't mean that you have to be under contract. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's just identify.
Correct.
You have 6 months then to actually proceed, be under contract, and close on a property. What happens if you close it at 181 days?
Then it's void.
Okay. Yep.
It's void. Yeah.
They don't give you extensions on
that. No, it's void. It's within the 180 days.
Okay. Yeah. So you have to make sure that you are on it. You can't.
Yeah. That's why it's important, even before you sell that property, like the condo before, it's important to kind of already be thinking. If that's what you want to do, it's okay to be thinking that. And I want to say that the exchange, you know, the like kind, the postponing the taxes, that's what you're doing. You know, that you're not eliminating the taxes. The taxable event will eventually come.
Yeah.
When you don't continue doing this. So when you don't continue, you know, selling and getting another properties, relinquishing and selling it, relinquishing and selling.
Yeah.
And buying, I'm sorry. So at this point, you're postponing it for later. Now it could be a big snowball effect too, you know, because now, you know, at one point, maybe in 10 years, now your gain is even higher.
Right.
Yeah. But I always tell my clients, what is your income? What tax bracket you're in? Does it make sense to postpone the taxes? You know, because maybe when you retire, your income is going to be less anyway. So that right. will help. You know, but today you're making a lot of money and taking the hit on the taxes could be more. So everyone has a you know, every reason for you to postpone the taxes could be personal to you.
Right. Exactly.
Financially, emotionally, it could mean a lot of different things, whether you want to do that or not.
Yes. And whenever you do end up paying the taxes, when you stop relinquishing one property for another, mm-hmm. does it accumulate all of the taxes of all the properties that you dealt with while you were doing the 1031 exchange, or how does that work at the end?
So at the end, it boils down to that particular event to that property.
Okay.
So if your gain is higher, then you kind of did roll all that stuff with you and got a bigger gain.
Okay.
You know, but it's definitely an amount that is, you don't know. You don't know until you decide to stop doing the 1031 exchange, and then you'll see what your gain is at that moment.
Okay. That makes sense. And we talked about the boot, and the boot was, the question about the boot is, what mistake most commonly kills an exchange?
Not identifying it within the, you know, the 45 days, yeah. not closing with the 6 months, or not getting something that is like kind.
Exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you're prepared whenever you're going to do a 1031 exchange and get all the information that you need up front. And if this has been so good, I know that our investors watching are going to want to talk to you. Where can they go to get guidance and planning on the 1031 exchange or anything that is related to accounting with you?
They can definitely send us any. I'm very happy to answer any emails to info@targettaxsolutions.com. We are working on our website, so awesome. We should have something good and going by next year. I've been in business for over 20 years. I'm very accessible. We try to give everyone, you know, obviously good sound tax advice. I do want to say that everyone has something different every yes. year. I always tell my clients, you know, me and you can go to the doctor. We can both get prescribed, you know, two different medicines exactly. for the same symptoms.
So exactly.
Everyone is different. Every situation is unique. So I like to listen. I like to hear everything that you have to say so I can give you good sound tax advice.
Perfect. And I've been going to her for years. She's bilingual. She's absolutely mm-hmm. amazing. Everybody in the office is amazing. Nifa, thank you so much of course, absolutely. Thank you for making complicated tax topics clear and accessible for our viewers today. These rules can truly shape a family's financial future, and your guidance helps people make confident decisions. To our audience, remember, understanding your home and financial choices is part of building your legacy. Whether you are buying, selling, investing, knowledge is one of your greatest assets. I'm Veronica Diquez, and this has been Home Story with Veronica. Thank you, Nifa, so much
You're
for
welcome.
Coming.
Thank
and
you.
Join us next time for more information, more insights to empower your home, your family, and your future. Thank you for watching.